friends. Welcome to Silo Busting. I'm your host, Allison Coden, an interaction designer at EPAM Continuum. There's a scene in action, heist, and superhero movies that I always love. That moment when the big evil or the complicated problem gets too big and too complicated, and the person in charge has to go out and assemble a team. There's the hard-bitten ex-con with bulging biceps and a heart of gold, the femme fatale who's a martial arts master, the green-haired teenage tech savant, and the metal android who just wants to belong. Well, you can fill in the rest. Then there's the part where this ragtag group has to figure out how to collaborate, but before they can, someone gets offended, someone gets put in a headlock, and someone refuses the mission or threatens to give the game away. And then the group finally does get together. They survive some danger, there's a stirring speech, they develop code words, and bam, you've got a supergroup that can take on anything. So what makes these teams finally pull together to become more than the sum of their parts? It's shared skill, shared language, and a common comprehension of the threat they face. As we'll hear from Michael Mumkwaglu, CEO and co-founder of Cardinal Ops, Sam Raymond, EPAM's Chief Information Security Officer and SVP, and Aviv Srora, Head of Cyber Innovation, today's Security Operations Center, or SOC, teams need the same shared knowledge to be effective. Their efficiency grows when they develop a common terminology for different attack styles, a reliable process to identify and escalate threats, and a shared understanding of the space. Companies have AI and other tools to sift through perhaps thousands of incidents to find the real threats, but it's the creativity, communication, and focus of the team that will ultimately save the day.
Hey Sam, Michael, I'm glad you're here. We have lots of questions for today, and I know you have an interesting perspective on the challenges faced by SOC teams these days. I'm looking forward to hearing your insights. But before diving to trends and solutions that can enhance the monitoring capabilities of security operations, let's go over basic terms to make sure our audience is aligned. So Sam, would you like to explain us what a SIMSOC team is and what is this MITRE framework everyone on the security world are talking about?
That's a loaded question, by the way. Good to hear from you, Aviv, and thanks for joining us, Michael. That's a loaded question. I think we should actually have a joint discussion around it. On a very, very high level, we all understand that security is not a fire and forget exercise. And this is very abstract, if you hope you don't mind, but security is never a fire and forget exercise. There's both the strategic side and the tactical side. The tactical side is the day-to-day working. When something bad happens, you react to it, or something is missing, you patch it. There is a constant patching, fixing, remediating and modifying and improving it. Typically, on a very, very high level, those are what we call operations, which is, you know, teams that would actually patch up systems, look for, they would see any kind of indication, see their different kinds of vulnerability that pops up. It could be different types of attack pops up. In theory, that's when they would go in and start to assess and figure out what needs to be done. Some of those could be automated, some of those are not. Those feeds comes in all kinds of different forms. It comes in from, but it has to come from an understanding of what your own set of equipment is. That's where CMDB comes in. That's where a lot of your configuration management comes in. All those maps out to, you know, sometimes a big organization where they have to handle it. And SIM is in many ways an aggregate, you know, tunnel and a funnel that basically in hope that it will A, aggregate all those events that are coming in. And another way is that B, it would be able to actually reduce and filter those so that your team is not ending up basically spending all their time filtering what needs to be there and what's not. And that's on a very, very high level in a nutshell. But, you know, think of that almost as the team that's working 24/7, which is, you know, most cases there are, working around the clock globally to make sure that, you know, they're patching all the issues that's around your endpoints, your servers, your systems, your network. That's what that operation would look like. And you can almost see that funnel coming through to that team as they actually start to progress. And then there was the other side of validation and so on, not in this topic per se, but, you know, there was the other side, which is how do you validate that? How do you know that's effective? How do you know that's actually real? So that's when we get into some of the other topic. But again, it's a big question. It's everybody debates it exactly what it is to some degree. That's, you know, how I would define it. But Michael, would love to hear your thoughts about how you would define it and what do you see is different these days, because it's a morphing space.
And when I kind of think and talk about this topic, I often say it's a really hard problem. It's a very complex problem that security operations people need to address. And that is basically their ability to continuously understand what they're trying to protect and be able to detect a very, very wide range of potential attacks. So basically keeping up with the constant change in the environment is one of the biggest challenges that we're hearing of, and being able to detect the growing threat landscape, right? And I think this is where I believe MITRE ATT&CK has come in to really change how security operations is done, is by creating this catalog of attacker or adversary techniques and different ways that were observed over the years, different ways in which attackers operate, which provides a unified language that allows us to relate to different types of attacks, be able to then answer questions of, are we prepared for such an attack? Did such an attack happen? How do we respond to these different types of attacks? So that is kind of in many ways uplifted the ability to talk about and make progress as an industry to address these threats.
Yeah, I agree. And it really changed the world for white hat folks, including myself as a CEH. I can tell you, it changed the world of how we communicate. It used to be that, you know, it was very difficult to communicate what a technique looks like. And I'm purely looking at it from the outside in that perspective. But MITRE, in the beginning, it changed the way how we looked at, you know, how do we classify it? Because if you look at MITRE, it's separated out into categories. It's not only about the techniques, but, you know, you can look at it now. You talk about IA, I understand you talk about IA. If you are, you know, talking about lateral attacks, I understand you talk about lateral attacks. I think that helps a lot because the communication now creates a certain framework and consistency around what do we call an attack, because it used to be unless you read the code to some degree, that's how you look at it. But the side effect of it, to your point, Michael, is now we can actually use that framework to create, you know, what that coverage looks like or how we, because we all know that attacker is not doing just one steps. It's a chain. It's a kill chain of separate events of what they do. And if we don't have a framework like that, it makes it very, very difficult to assess what really were those steps. If you look at most RCA right now, they're in MITRE. They basically list out what those techniques are, and it's much cleaner. It takes me, I don't know, 5 minutes to read an RCA right now versus before. It was a whole week of exercise. So I think all those are huge benefit with the framework we provide. Of course, like any framework, there are pros and cons to it. But so far, right now, personally, I haven't seen anything better.
Yeah, I think actually, from my perspective, as Sam, as you said, it makes everything much more simple. There is a language to those attacks, and there is a standard, and everyone can talk about it. But although it changed a lot, the mapping of attack and the understanding of techniques, from my perspective, security operations teams have been struggling to keep up for a long time. Although we have great frameworks and maps, the charges are coming from different angles. There is the shortage in manpower, the endless number of systems we have to connect to, high number of false positive, and although lots of companies are shifting into MSSPs or managed SOCs, we still experience similar challenges, an endless stream of incident. I actually just saw an article a few days ago that said approximately 60% of organizations have their own SOC, I mean large organization, but 40% rely on external MSSPs. You can kind of think of it, if it's a central MSSP, then he must have the expertise to protect lots and lots of organizations, but that just don't cut it. So, Michael, I would like to ask you, on your opinion, what are the main challenges SOC teams face these days?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the main challenge that I see is really the increasing complexity. Complexity is growing exponentially with the more and more tools, more and more technologies, and the very dynamic nature, right? The constant change in the environments. And basically what we see is that the rate of tech adoption in the business and the evolving threat landscape are basically outpacing the SOC, right? The SOC is in a constant chase, trying to catch up with all that change. A very classical example of that is cloud adoption, where enterprises, you know, were in the past on-prem, now find themselves in hybrid multi-cloud environments with dozens of new technologies to monitor and secure, that is posing a huge challenge for those teams. And of course, with every new technology, both on the IT side and on the security side, with every new tool and with every new technology, that team needs to have now subject matter experts in really a huge range of technologies and tools. It's really very, very hard. And to Aviv's point, they need to do that all while hiring and training and retaining security people is a huge challenge, as we know, in the industry. So all of these factors combined mean that they really have very big challenges to achieve that very difficult task that we mentioned.
Yeah, and I think the best way to look at it is to take an example. I've been doing incident response for 10 years, so I'll take an incident example. Alongside complex incident, I have seen many incidents which could have been easily prevented with the proper rules. And let's take an example. We had a client that transferred his users to Office 365. Since it was fresh and new, and he looked at it as email only, it wasn't on his top systems to be connected to his SIM. A few months later, he suffered from an account takeover incident that caused a massive spread of malicious email inside the organization, basically bypassing the mail relay because they are using a legitimate account. Everything caused by a malicious login to Office 365. Although it's a simple incident, it brings up three critical problems. The first one, organizations are moving to the cloud, using different apps and systems, and usually not all of them are being collected internally or to a centralized SIM systems. The second problem, by default, all those systems are not saving log as the SIM should. Some of them could be saving logs just for 7 or 30 days. And if you don't collect them on a central system, then even once you have the incident, you cannot investigate it. So you have those blind spots where things are not connected, and you have those blind spots with missing logs. And Sam, I would love to get your opinion on that point. So from your expertise and after seeing lots and lots of security teams, how can a SOC team, a security operations center, keep up the rule set updated and effective to detect and respond to new threats? You don't want to miss critical incidents, but you don't want to handle false positives all day long.
You're not going to like my answer. So you basically just gave me the question that's on every CISO's top of their head. So that's the number one problem. I think, Michael, you're trying to articulate very well, which is effectiveness. At the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. And a validation of that, that's the biggest issue, which is so most CISOs that I talk to be very frank with you, I'm not going to name any names, of course, but most CISOs that I talk to is still struggling with the fact that they're just not collecting the logs properly and they're not getting to the logs. That's still their struggle. The ones that's more advanced, and I'm showing you the progression of different level of maturity from the organization perspective. So, others that I've talked to, they basically are struggling with, now they have alt data, as to your point, how do they actually, filter it down and define what is real, what is not, because the false positives, remember, the false positives not just around a workload problem. Some people thought that you could just throw more people at it, and then you solve the problem. It's actually not just that, because if you look at any kind of investigation of any sort, the abundance of white noise basically not only would cause a capacity problem, but it would numb the system down, meaning your teams would now no longer have the right awareness of what is really anomaly, what is really odd, what is really something that requires investigation. And so that abundance of white noise actually would kill your system. If you look at most of the incidents that's out there that published their RCAs, and if you go back and look at the MERS incident, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, there's a very good write-up on it publicly available. If you look at it, a lot of it was because of this numbing down, which is, you know, you get a lot of noise, you get a lot of feedback. And so to navigate, to figure out what is effective, what is not, I'll give you my answer, but, you know, on a very, very high level. Number one, accept the fact that it's a constant tuning process. Forget about the fact that you would get a perfect solution. You're not going to get a perfect solution. It's a continuous improvement that you constantly have to tweak. That's number one. Number two is you need to understand how to tweak. And there are a number of ways that you can actually tweak. Your red team is your good friend here, by the way. Any way that your red team can actually help create an out-of-band type of in-band type of incident that would actually allow you to validate your mean time to discovery, your mean time to remediation. Those are all critical things because you can't just wait for an attack to happen. So those simulations are critical. Anything that would actually allow you to actually provide AI base, you know, I know that's a big loaded term, but anything that actually would start to do some kind of linear progression based on, you know, based on trends, it slows things down on detection sometimes, so you have to watch out for it. But in other ways, it allows you to actually create your baseline and keep moving up your baseline. And then from then, I mean, there are great solutions that I'm sure we're going to talk about and love to hear Michael's thought about that. But understand that this is a continuous process that you actually have to be, you know, resilience is the word. I think you have to be keep going towards it. But you need to make sure you have your sensors in place. You have to have your streams going in place. You have to make sure that the team is continually doing retrospective and understanding. They're improving it. You have to have ways to actually validate and to simulate so that you know that whatever you're detecting is actually, you know, processing it. It's actually affecting, you know, real result. Last but not least, you have to experiment with new results, new technology, which just includes anywhere from, you know, containment technology to all the way to MLs and stuff like that. So that's on a very, very high level, but I don't have a silver bullet for you.
Yeah, and I think that people struggle to understand that. Michael, maybe you have something to add here, that it's not just the rule or just the log. Even if you think your system is working correctly, you need to have all three components working properly. So you need to have the existence of the proper log, you need to have the existence of the proper rule, and you need the match between the rule syntax and the log syntax, otherwise they would just never fire up. Right, Michael? I think you have great experience with those problems.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I want to kind of double down on Sam's point of a continuous improvement process, which I think is key. This is not a type of fire and forget type of problem. This is not something you do once, forget about it, and hope for the best. That you know comes from that dynamic nature of the environments that I mentioned. If your SOC is standing in place, it's actually degrading in its effectiveness over time. The SOC has to be agile and proactive and continuously adapt, and that requires the team to create this kind of continuous process, right? We're in a very systematic process that continuously identifies gaps in the capability to detect different threats that are relevant to the organization, validate that the existing detections are working as intended. To Aviv's point, and I'll maybe talk a little bit more on different ways in which those can become ineffective and break, and also be, you know, mindful of the efficiency, because if we constantly add more and more log sources and add more and more detections, what will happen is that over time we're going to incur higher and higher costs and create a higher and higher load on our security operations center. So to balance that increased effectiveness, we need to be in a continuous cycle of identifying opportunities to optimize and increase efficiency. And that can come in the form of identifying redundant and logs that are just not contributing to threat coverage. And that can come in the form of identifying noisy detections that are creating many false positives, adding load to the SOC. So then tuning those and enabling us to take the next step to in our kind of journey towards effectiveness. maybe to add one more point. So really, you know, when looking at even something simple as a SIM rule, you know, our researchers found by now over 50 different ways a single SIM rule can break, right? Just because of the multitude of dependencies and the complexity of those systems, they depend on the data being received, the right sources, the right events, the right fields, those being properly parsed. Sometimes there are dependencies between rules. So it's really a very, very complex problem, and it requires a very systematic and hopefully automated mechanism to help with that complexity.
Yeah, and I think those technical problems, we are jumping between the framework and the day-to-day technical problems. But if we go back a little, I think, to the CISO perspective, we know that solving day-to-day technical problems, even the logs are parsed correctly and the rules are configured, that's not enough. The SOC team, he has lots of problems. He wants to investigate and respond in a timely manner. He wants to prioritize. He wants to keep up with the latest technologies and techniques, but we also want to measure him. We want to know, are they progressing? Are they effective? Are they able to cover new attack? So I'll go back to you, Sam, and ask you from the CISO perspective, what are the metrics or KPIs you use to measure the effectiveness of your SOC? How can you validate that they are indeed progressing?
Very good question. So, million-dollar question. So, and you mentioned just specifically on the SOC itself, because CISO looked at a number of metrics, and you really look at two sets of metrics. One that you would present to the board, and recently I just have a discussion around that. Those are very high-level metrics, but then from a SOC perspective, I think it's actually much more around mean time to discovery, the event, the funnel, basically the top of that funnel that actually comes in through, which is how big is your data set that comes in. Not so much just the event per second. Event per second is critical. That gives you a certain aspect of it, but from comparing between the amount of log data that actually you ingest, you could ingest, because that could be a problem, to all the way down to exactly what those events are generated and filtered. And then from that, how many of those are actually considered as out of policies, out of compliance, or that's remediated. Those are the types of metrics that I looked at. Mean time to discovery, it's critical. Mean time to, you know, remediation is critical. Those are aspects of how soon I could. And from top to bottom, typically I would use, and these are exceptional cases, but I would use, you know, exercises from Red Team to basically say, you know, from top to bottom all the way, how long would it actually take for one throughput entire chain? Would it take to actually get to a point that I actually got to the last step in the remediation and recovery? So those are some of the top level metrics that I looked at from a SOC team. To fine tune them, however, it's not one single number or one set of numbers. Is you look at those various steps to fine tune them. You want to fine tune the filtering aspect of it, as you mentioned. I think that needs to be fine tuned. Ultimately, you want to look for the result. You know, as I mentioned before a number of times, is mean time to detection is everything. It's everything, everything, everything. So it's how quickly you can actually detect it. Of course, fixing is an issue, but sometimes fixing it it's a matter of design, orchestration, and it sometimes, I hate to say, even out of your hand, because if somebody were to build a product that's almost impossible to cleanse, it's you're going to have to accept the fact that mean time to recovery is going to take a little bit longer. It's not your fault if they use 50 different types of databases in one application, but you're going to have to deal with that. So detection time is key, and false positive, those are all aspects that, you know, you will look for. But, and I could go on, but ultimately that time of detection, false positive, how much data can you ingest, look at that ratio between that to actually what turn into events from that events, how many events can you process within your organization, how many you drop, and then coming out from the other side of it through one single from top to bottom simulation, how long does that take on each and every step? Those are all measures that I would rely on.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you very much. And I think not just measuring and understanding your effectiveness of your SOC, it's an important part, Also, the SOC is a central place to help organization taking the most out of his security stack. So from IBM's large security research on 2021, they found out that around 60% of organizations said they have more than 30 security tools. And I think we all agree it's almost impossible to manage, and taking the most out of all those solutions, it's extremely complex. And Michael, I want to ask you about it. So you have worked with many organizations and different spaces. Maybe we have another time to talk about it, but what's your way and how would you recommend organization to take the most out of each tool they already have through the central logging system? And I know there are lots of emerging trends and technologies about it. A few years back, we had SOAR system that mainly helped us with automation and investigation scripts, but this time has passed. And if you can elaborate more on the technology side and the need to take the most out of logs you already have.
Yeah, sure. So I think as we kind of outlined the process required to get to that level of effectiveness is extremely complex. And typically what we see at organizations is that they have relatively small and understaffed teams of security engineers and detection engineers that are responsible to answer these types of questions. The question of, are we actually monitoring the right things? Are we asking the right questions? Are we able to detect different types of attacks? These are, as I think we've outlined in this conversation, extremely hard to and do not scale with the small people. So what we believe is critical here is to introduce technology and automation and analytics to this space that was basically until today completely manual. And so this area is where our Carl Ops is operating today, where we are introducing what we call the detection posture management technology that leverages automation and analytics and the MITRE ATT&CK framework that we talked about earlier to create this consistent process that leverages automation to act as a force multiplier to that existing team to continuously detect and remediate gaps in our readiness by better configuring the tools the organization already has and making sure that they're optimized, have the proper integrations, configurations, and rules to detect the next attack.
Yeah, and I believe this automation is critical, and we have seen as the technology evolves and security world evolves, automations kind of get into those processes as much as needed. I think, Sam, you also have kind of a good perspective on this.
In fact, I would love to hear your perspective on how would you automate, Aviv. You've done this for years, and there are lots of, as you pointed out, both you and Michael said it very well, that, you know, it's, yes, you get to the events, but, you know, what can actually help to make the analyst's job easier, and what can actually make their life more effective, and so on. And there are tools out there that's very effective. What do you use? What do you see out there that's actually, you know, effective?
So I think, and this could be really a nice wrap up. We talked a lot about the technology and the need for automation. So I think I'll talk more on the process and procedure side. So number one, you said red team is your best friend. You need to make sure your analysts understand the attack, understand what they are defending from. And for each kind of rule or investigation they are running, they need to have a proper process. They need to train for it. And you're only good as your team is. So you cannot expect them to investigate a rule they have never seen before effectively on the first time. It's not just the technology, it's the combination of a good technology, a good expertise, and a trained team. And after doing lots of incidents, I think this is something we've seen coming on and on. And really, you need to have a good and trained team. I think that's really the key point. If you have good automation and you're able to map correctly where you're missing the logs, then the next thing would be to get your team on it and make sure they investigate properly. Michael, you were doing great automation and lots of work with your solution about it. Would you like to add just a few more sentences before we finish this podcast about your solution and our partner together to offer clients the combination of a good product and a great professional services?
Sure. So I think the last aspect maybe worth mentioning on the automation side is goes back to your question on reporting and KPIs. We're basically continuously mapping the existing detections to MITRE ATT&CK now opens the door to allow us to demonstrate to the board and the senior management how we are increasing the effectiveness and readiness towards attacks over time and how we are reducing the risk to the organization. So I think it's another key aspect where, first of all, MITRE ATT&CK contributes to this and how automation can enable the team to create that very deep reporting without requiring, again, very manual work from the team. And finally, to that point, we're very happy with the partnership that we've established with EPAM, where we are basically bringing the technology that we've developed at Cardinal Ops together with the expertise and that end-to-end understanding of the processes, the organizations, what's really required to get that end-to-end process in place in terms of training and testing and everything required. And I believe that combination of cyber expertise with our unique technologies is very, very powerful.
I can't agree more, Michael. Yeah, I appreciate it. And we really appreciate that partnership as well. I think we're really going to help a lot of customers out there together. So appreciate it. Sorry, Aviv, you were saying?
Yeah, no, I was just saying thank you to Michael. And I think this was a very interesting podcast and discussion about the challenges SOC teams have these days.
No, thank you both. We can easily go on for another hour. we have the time. But
that would be fun.
Thank you both very much.
This has been Silo Busting, a podcast from EPAM Continuum. EPAM Continuum integrates business experience and technology consulting focused on accelerating breakthrough ideas into meaningful impact. Why do we do this? Because real opportunities aren't siloed. Thanks to Michael Mumkwaglu, Sam Raymond, and Aviv Soror for the great conversation. Cheers to Kip Palalas, our sound engineer extraordinaire, for getting this podcast recorded. Applause to Ken Gordon, our producer, for all his masterminding behind the scenes. I'm your host, Allison Coden, and I'm off to assume my secret identity.